Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. For the present, my answers are posted every other week on Mondays, and Dr. Yaron Brook answers questions on current events on the alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off at the end, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Ayn Rand in her magazine years ago had a feature called Horror File, in which incredibly evil or irrational ideas circulating in the culture were expressed in so explicit and unmistakable a form that they actually evoked a feeling of horror that someone could be this consistent. And her motive was to show people what really is involved in the rejection of her ideas, the exception of irrational ideas. I have just come across in a review in the New York Times of something that would qualify for her horror file, because they're very high standards. It can't just be awful. This is a new book called Strangers Drowning. It has a very long subtitle, but it amounts to people who are coping with impossible idealism and the overpowering urge to help others. Now, this is not just what you would think. It's exactly what consistent altruism would be if you understand what that doctrine is. You know, meaning you discard and sacrifice all your values, any values, in order to serve others. And now people say, oh, that's just a philosophical elaboration. Here are just a few examples. I'm sure you can get many more from the book. And the author, who seems to be fair, she thinks they're idealists, but they're a little bit out of it, writes that obsessively, I'm quoting, these people sacrifice little luxuries and add up the lives they've saved. You know, this money could have been used for that, etc. Then they wonder if they should give up more things that they don't need. And they seriously wonder, should they give up cable television, having children, a new winter coat, that extra kidney they've been carrying around with them? They're guilty because they got two kidneys and somebody else has zero. So is this not fair? And if you live for others, that should be your priority. Now, if anyone said this in theory, as we have for many, many decades, they say, oh, that's ridiculous. No one would do this. But people are doing it to such an extent that this explicit implication of altruism is a movement. I'll just give you a couple quick examples. You can look up the rest. This lady, I won't give her a name, one of them, allowed her boyfriend to buy her a $4 candy apple, after which she was overwhelmed with tortured thoughts. Quote, with her selfish, ridiculous desire for a candy apple, the Observer writes, she might have deprived a family of an anti-malarial bed net or deworming medicine that might have saved the life of one of its children. So that just gives you an idea. They describe it as, this book is a journey through the am I doing enough world of ambitious altruism. And you want to get an idea of how wicked people can be, and also how guilty they can be, how susceptible to Christian propaganda. I think this will give you such an example. I can't resist one other example of selflessness from this book, and that is one man tells his girlfriend, I'm quoting, that he can't wash the dishes because it will detract from his crusade to reduce the pain suffered by poultry. So, he really altruistically sacrificed his girlfriend so that he's free to think and do things to make poultry happy. You see why that really belongs in Horrorfall. All right, now let's switch to nice people, those who asked questions this time. According to objectivism, values are chosen voluntarily, but it seems like some values are automatic or innate, like sex. Who doesn't like sex? Well, you have to distinguish between value and pleasure. Pleasures, to the extent that they are partly physical, are certainly automatic. They come from some kind of stimulus which fosters the life or well-being of the orgasm. But the fact that they are pleasure automatically does not mean that they are values automatically. There are many people in many schools who set out to denounce these automatic pleasures as the pull of the wicked earth on their souls. You know the whole medieval attitude to try to combat pleasure, certainly to try to combat sexual pleasure, try to be abstinent, all the way up to today. These girls, who I believe are philosophically, not only psychologically influenced, to fight against the need for food. But in other words, leaving aside that side thought on my part, automatic pleasure does not mean automatic value. What is the moral principle governing the acceptance of wealth through inheritance when the money willed is associated with pain and suffering, and when the majority of it is ill-begotten through corruption and bribery? Now, I want to ask a single question. Associated with pain and suffering is meaningless in this context. Completely meaningless. What did the person do? Did he cause pain to someone illegally by using physical force against him, by robbing him? What is it, a criminal law or not? Or is this just one of his relatives, for instance, was miserable when he heard where the money is going? And so now you say, well, the money will is associated with pain and suffering. That is empty of content, those words. Now, the same is true of through corruption and bribery. Therefore, can we violate his will? Apparently, there was no proof of that, since those would be crimes during his lifetime. So how do you know about it? Now, if you say you have inside knowledge, then, and if there are victims, you should go to the police and tell them and see that there is, compensation insofar as possible. But a tremendous amount of this idea of violating the right of inheritance is through rumor and through desire to get a different outcome with his property. And I oppose that 100%. If you have no clear-cut evidence of crime that you could take to the police and they say, okay, there's a prima facie case, then all of these language about ill-begotten and so on is just a validation, an attempted validation, a rationalization of robbery, of taking that man's money, which is still his until his will has been carried out, and trying to distribute it elsewhere. And, you know, in the case of a man, his will, you have to bend over backwards, because no matter what somebody tells you, the man himself is not around to give the other side. It's really easy to, attack a dead man and then say, well, this is clear cut, there's no opposition. That is ridiculous, totally. So prima facie, there are criminals to what you're saying is applicable, but the way you put it just opens the door to any creep that wants to violate the right of leaving your wealth. Is it irrational to not like and not want to be around someone for relatively superficial reasons? Say you don't like the way they talk or the way they dress, or there's just a vibe you get from the person that you don't like, even if they didn't do or say anything specifically harmful to you, period. No, I don't regard that as irrational at all, as you described it. There are a tremendous number of personal options in the people that you decide that you want as a friend or a social relationship. And you can't, obviously, you don't have the time or the desire to put an FBI investigation out on each one. You have to go by first impressions, unless you have something overriding that, where there's some importance to this relationship and you want to try further. But certainly, you have no obligation to try further. You can say about somebody without knowing anything further, I don't like the way he speaks. I feel he's not speaking openly. And now, you know, you can find out, as I once did, saying something like that, that the person was nervous, that he spoke very slowly, and that didn't prove anything. But I didn't know that, and to me, anybody that was that slow or that seemed to pause about everything, I didn't know what he was doing, and I wasn't interested in continuing. And I wasn't interested in continuing even after that I knew he was completely innocent, because I was not the kind of person I wanted to associate with. I'm not denouncing him. I'm saying there's so many possibilities. If something puts me off right away, there is no reason to tell why I have to follow it up and try and see what he's like. One thing philosophy can say about this is, from this kind of instantaneous feeling, you know, Ayn Rand used to call these stomach feelings. In other words, they don't come from your real knowledge. They come from just the reaction to the sensory, immediate perceptual result. And her point was, if you cannot identify them, but they're stronger, they bother you, then there's no reason in the world to continue with that person. But if you can't identify what is really going on and that it's really bad, then you cannot go from, I don't want this person as an associate, to, this person is evil, this person is dishonest. You cannot make objective moral judgments, if I can use her term, on the basis of stomach feelings. You can convert stomach feelings sometimes into knowledge, but it takes a lot of time, and it's just not worth it to you in most cases. Upon quitting a job on not the best terms with my employer, I noticed on my final paycheck that they had given me a few $100s more than what I should have gotten based on the hours I worked. Should I inform them of this mistake or just keep the money? Considering that payroll is their responsibility and they messed up. So if so, it's the problem is on them, not on me. No, I disagree altogether with that. One thing is, did they make a mistake? Have they been nice to you? It's an entirely different thing that you are going to compensate for these treatments by stealing. Now, they owed you the money. They intended to pay you the money. And their honesty on this issue was such they were giving you too much. Of course, it was an error, but even so, you can't go in and say, well, you know, it's their problem. They made the mistake and I don't like them, so is it okay to steal? Now, what about banks, for instance? I have a credit card with banks that I know the banks are government institutions, but even so, they're lower than the DMV. And they treat you, especially in New York, very brusquely. You feel that, you know, they're trying to make it, we're doing you a big favor. And now suppose, and I'm quite hostile to certain banks, and not all, but for that reason. So suppose now you're asking for, let's say, $2,000 from your account, and you want it in 20s, 50s, and so on. And then you count it out afterwards, and there's 250s too much. Could I possibly be justified in saying, oh, well, you know, that $100, they've been very mean, and therefore I'm going to take it? I mean, that would be ridiculous. Yeah, a financial debt is one thing, and an emotional or personal opposition or, you know, if you want a retaliation, you write to CEO if it could get to him, or go to a different bank, or tell these people that you just left what you think of them. But certainly you can't justify robbery on the grounds that the person is morally unsatisfactory to you. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peakoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.